Acts 24. So as we left off, Paul had been arrested, and then there was some discussion about what to do with him. Then he was sent to Caesarea, if you recall, to save him, to protect him. He was sent there. And then Felix says, well, there's no point getting into this until we have every party involved. And so that's what they're waiting for. And now we come to chapter 24. After 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders. Descended. Now look at a map. And where is Caesarea? Okay. Got the Mediterranean Sea and you got Caesarea. And where is Jerusalem? Okay. He descended. You know why? Because anytime you leave Jerusalem, you descend. You go up to Jerusalem, you go down from Jerusalem. Always, that's referenced in the Bible. Anyway, with the elders and with certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul, and when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, did y'all read this? I mean, just the honey dripping off of his tongue as he talked. Seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done to this nation by thy providence. You're such a good leader. I mean, just trying to win him over. We accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious to thee, I pray thee thou wouldst hear us of thy clemency a few words. So just so sweet and just praising him. And then he says in verse 5, we have found this man a pestilent fellow. How many of you ever knew a pestilent fellow? How many of you have ever been a pestilent fellow? a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world. Well, that's quite a testimony, isn't it? A ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. Again, not a bad title. Verse 6. Who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us with great violence, took him away out of our hands. Is that exactly the way you recall it happened? It's not the account we read, is it? Commanding, verse 8, commanding his accusers to come to thee by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. So he's got a crowd of people there to support his testimony. And the story he tells is not exactly the way it occurred. So why would he change? Why is it shifting? Why did his story become more damning toward Lysias? Okay, because he's trying to persuade. It's what we call today propaganda, right? And so he's ticked off because they took Paul away from him. He wanted to kill him right then. So now he's mad. And so he says, you should have let us do it, and you came in and took him away from us by force. Verse 10, then Paul, after the governor had beckoned to him to speak, answered, for as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge to this nation, I do more cheerfully answer for myself. Again, a little sugar dropping off the tongue, right? Why? Set the tone. You know, it's when you look at people like Felix, How many of us ever had, what's the name of that? Johnny Paycheck. Take this job. You remember that? No, if I could, this church, I know. I'm not supposed to say that, but the description Johnny Paycheck gave of his boss, right? Is, you know, he's got this big ego. And so we notice it with Tertullus. Now we see it with Paul. They're going to feed the ego a little bit. They're going to serve. And, you know, we can like it or not, but some of us work for people that you have to feed their ego. You have to make them feel like they're smarter than everybody else in the room, even if they're not. You have to give them that in order to move things along. And that's really what Paul's doing here. But he says, but I'm cheerful. I'm glad I can answer for myself. I believe you to be a fair judge, and I'm glad I can answer for myself. Verse 11, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. They neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues, nor in the city. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. You see that? There's no evidence. Again, the trial is, we always say it's about the defendant, but really it's about the prosecution. Did they prove their case or not? And Paul's saying, where's your evidence? You didn't take me in the temple. You didn't have me in the city. You didn't have me causing an uprising. You can accuse me of all that stuff, of being that person, but that's not what happened. He continues in verse 14. But this I confess to thee, after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. He says, in fact, not only did I not do what they said I did, I agree with most of what they believe. I mean, they believe the same thing I do. Verse 16, herein do I exercise myself, to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult. What did I do? Verse 19. Who ought to have been here before thee, and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these same here say, if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council. Except it be for this one voice that I cried, standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called in question by you this day. That's the only thing. The truth is, they don't like me. Right? That's what he doesn't say there. Have we ever condemned somebody just because we don't like them? Have we ever judged somebody harshly just because we don't like them? Yes. Have we ever abused someone, or I say abuse, that might be the wrong term, but mistreated someone just because we simply just don't like them? It's not really that they did anything wrong. They just, as we say, rubbed us the wrong way at some point. And since then, we haven't been able to put up with them or have any confidence in them or tolerate them. Paul says, I was purified. I wasn't causing a scene. I wasn't raising a riot. The people that actually grabbed me and attacked me, they're not even here. So the eyewitnesses to whatever offense that I've committed, they're not even here. Now, how are you going to say I did anything wrong? Verse 22, when Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, when Lysias the chief captain shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter. And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, that he should forbid none of his acquaintances to minister or come to him. So Paul was still not free to go. He was still detained, but mainly just trying to keep him nearby for the trial when Lysias would actually arrive. Verse 24, after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. As he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled. You know, and that isn't that really what it's about? As long as people can keep from thinking about it, they're not afraid of it. They don't get conviction. They don't get concern. Some people do not want to talk about death. There are only two people, right, in all of history that we can account for that haven't died. Right? Enoch and Elijah. That's it. I mean, even Jesus died, rose again and ascended, but even Jesus died. Lazarus died twice. That boy from Nain, he died twice too. I mean, we don't know much of a story, just that Jesus resurrected him at his funeral. And that soldier that landed on the body of Elisha and resurrected, right? So we got a couple of dead people that died twice. But as far as never dying, only Elijah and Enoch. So still 100% death rate. And we're going to die. We got to prepare for death. That means life insurance, funeral arrangements. Take the burden off your family. If you have certain verses or songs or burial site or cremation or whatever, you go ahead and arrange it. Get it worked out. Because I can tell you, in the moments of grief, in the days and hours following your death, it's too much stress for your family to have to deal with that. Get it arranged ahead of time and pay for. You know, because and if you've got anything to leave people, or don't, write it out. Just put, you're not getting anything, right? If that's what you got to put in, just spell it out. You know why? And I was talking, we were talking about it even this morning, how that nobody wants to be part of the care, but everybody wants to be part of the heir. And that's about where it is. So, you know, write it down, spell it out, because we're all going to get there. And if you, anyway, you didn't come here to hear that, but get it done. People don't want to talk about death. They don't want to think about it. When Paul was able to get Felix to hear and to consider, to get him to think about it, he got real close to salvation, didn't he? When he could get him to think about it. Well, we don't talk about death because people don't want to, they don't want to consider it. The truth is, all will die except there come a rapture. And then those of faith will be raptured, but those without faith will not be raptured. They will still die. He reasoned of righteousness, verse 25, temperance and judgment to come. Felix trembled and said, "Go thy way, for this time, when I have a convenient season, I will call for thee." And isn't that how people do? When it's convenient, I'll think about it. I'll get saved later in life. I'll go to church later in life. I'll find God later in life. But that day never comes. Because the truth is, no matter how old or sick we get, we still think we've got more time. We may say, "I don't know why the Lord keeps me around," but we still expect we're going to be around tomorrow. That's the reality. And I mean, I talk to people about that all the time. That's the reality. Very few people are really ready in the emotional and spiritual state when it comes their time. We always think a little bit longer would be better. It also says in verse 26 that he hoped that he should have been given money of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. He spent a lot of time with him. But was it because he liked him? No, it's because he was greedy. Because he wanted money. He wanted to get paid. And, you know, unfortunately, we see that in people in power today, don't we? But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room. In other words, he took his job. And Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. And Festus was come into the province after 3 days. He ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Again, ascended. And also, it doesn't hurt that Caesarea is on the sea also. Sea level. The high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying in wait to kill him. So they thought, if we could get Festus to get him drawn down to Jerusalem, we can kill him on his way back. Who are these people? they went back on their promise, didn't they? They're eating somewhere. These are religious people. If you said, tell us the commandments, what's the first one we always think of? Thou shalt not kill. When I talk to people and ask them if they're saved, they say, look, I never killed anybody. You think that's the only sin there is? Killing people? These are the religious people, and they want to kill Paul. They're so enraged, and is it really about rage at this point? We're 2 years now. It's about what? It's about jealousy. And maybe it's even about, at this point, just trying to impress those that are above them. I mean, does anybody really care that much? Or is it just trying to impress people by going, hey, look, I'm the one that killed them? I mean, to be so, you know, I mean, we can relate to it, can't we? This derangement that 2 years later, they still hate him so much. I mean, the man's been locked away. But they can't stand them. So 2 years later, they're still trying to get them. Verse 4, but Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself would depart there shortly. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able to go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. When he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea. And the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. Now, how many of you believe that the original indictment, if you will, has now gotten broader? Right after 2 years, you look at those stories of the old gunman like Billy the Kid and such as that, and it might, there was historical fact and documented, you know, atrocities, if you will, and then there was the stories they were telling in the villages and the cities that was much bigger than that. And now after a couple of years, Paul's violence against the government and against religion, the story has just blown up and gotten bigger. Right? Exactly. And it's the same idea, you know, the hatred. And so, verse number 8, while he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. So look, I'm not against the Jews. I'm not against the temple. I'm not against the government. You just don't like me. Verse 9, but Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Well, hold on just a second, Festus. You're here. My accusers are here. Am I missing something? Like, isn't that what this is? You want a different venue? You want a venue where it's going to be more slanderous against me? More tilted in my against me? Paul says this, verse 10. I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews, have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. If I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal to Caesar. Now, so 2 years he's been in prison, right? Been in holding, not prison formally, but he's been detained. How could Paul have avoided all of this? Not going to Jerusalem. God told him, sent a prophet to tell him, had the church tell him, and Paul said, I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm going. This is what I'm going to do. And now for 2 years, his ministry's been hampered, hindered by this nonsense. Now, God told him already. He said, look, you're here. I'll get you. You'll go to Rome and you will speak the truth there. But isn't it incredible the pivot points of our lives where everything shifts? We don't even know all of them, do we? We don't notice the subtle pivot points in our lives where that choice that we made shifted the trajectory of our future in a different direction, right or wrong, worse or better. We could go back to those pivot points and say, it changed here. And such a dramatic, we don't know where Paul would have gone, right? We have no idea. The Lord said, I've got a big ministry for you in many places, just not in Jerusalem. But Paul went to Jerusalem, and all that changed. I think of King Saul. King Saul and King Jonathan. Except Jonathan never became king, because Saul usurped the office of the priest. And he disobeyed God, and God took away his crown and his throne. And so we were introduced to someone else named David and Solomon and all of that line. And we could argue the point of God's providence in Saul's life, but I can tell you that Saul lost his crown because of his choice, because of his action. So God raised up another. Pivot points. Paul said, I appeal to Caesar. Verse 10, then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. Verse 12, Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. After certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to salute Festus. When they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause to the king, saying, there's a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face. And he have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth. Against whom, when the accuser stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed. He thought, what a criminal. He said, but what they brought up was nothing. Even his imagination couldn't conceive that. Verse 19, but they had certain questions against him of their own superstition and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. Because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. So we have Felix, and then Festus, and now Agrippa. And we can really pick up there, because that's really more in chapter 26's realm. Comments, questions, criticisms, Brother John? It's a great point, but, you know, the Bible talks about Jacob and Esau, how Esau sought repentance with tears and found no place of repentance. And that is a great point, is that sometimes, and most of the time, in fact, all of the time, when we make a decision, we can't go back and do it over. And there's no way now for Paul to undo what he's done. By one decision, he's changed his entire future. By one, and was it a good thing he wanted to do? Yes. Guys, there's lots of good things that we could do. That's no question. And there are people who will criticize you for not doing what they do, because what they do is good. It doesn't matter. The point is, what does God want you to do? What does God want us to do? We can't do everything. All I can do is what God's called me to do. And if I don't do that and replace that with some other good thing, I'm out of God's will. Do you understand that? Even if it's a good thing, if it's not the God thing, I'm out of God's will. We have a purpose. A called purpose, a position, where he wants us, what he wants us doing. Paul will do good in his new future. But it's not the future God had planned. God can use us in his permissive will, but not as effectively as in his perfect will. Why? Because God has prepared us all the points in our lives according to the purpose he has planned for us. Right? Think about Abraham's life. Think about Moses' life. All that Moses went through in his first 40 years was preparation for the next 40 years, which was preparation for the next 40 years. But what if at the 40th year, when he saw a Hebrew being attacked, what if instead of defending the Jew and identifying with the Jews, what if he had just said, not my problem? And instead of then going to Midian and fleeing Egypt, he would have still been in Pharaoh's house. That one decision changed the future. What if he had decided he wasn't going to keep the sheep that day that he happened across a burning bush in the wilderness. He just said, I don't feel like doing it today. It's like the comment I saw, it said, you never know which church service is going to change your life, but you can guarantee it won't be the one you don't go to. Brother Ronnie. That's right. And it's not just the decisions that we make, is it? It's the decisions that other people make that put us in a different situation. Constantly adjusting. But understand that when God says, this is my plan for your life, Paul, and Paul says, I'm doing what I want to do, it's going to hurt a lot more. It's going to hurt a lot more to do God's will at that point. All right, let's take a break.